I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is Politics Unpacked. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42, making Washington a place where all can prosper. Sign up for their newsletter at future42.org. Let's unpack week 5 of the legislative session in Olympia. Democrats pushed forward this week with a bill that would allow cities and counties to increase property taxes by up to 3% every year. Right now, increases are capped at 1%. Republicans held an emergency press conference after learning that the bill was pulled out of the Rules Committee on Wednesday evening.
We're 2 to 3 times more than inflation at the city and county level in terms of amount of spending. We're twice the level of what, you know, median income growth in our state is. We know we're spending too much. We just are.
One of the people in favor of lifting the property tax lid is King County Executive Dow Constantine. Back in October of 2023, he warned that the county would be left in a dire financial situation if they could not increase property taxes more rapidly. A bill advanced out of committee this week that would make it easier to remove children from homes where a parent is abusing fentanyl. The Democrat-backed bill is a softened version of a Republican proposal that would have made drug use in the home proof of imminent harm. A bill that seemed to be dead for the session has found new life by becoming part of another bill. State Senator Marco Elias's plan to ban tires that don't meet certain fuel efficiency standards died in committee, but he was able to get the language added to an unrelated bill about electric vehicles. Also added to that bill is language that bans commercial vehicles from idling for more than 5 minutes at a time. Meanwhile, some mayors are upset to hear that a bill they supported seems to have run out of steam this session. House Bill 2211 and Senate Bill 6076 would have allowed cities to raise their sales tax to pay for more police officers without having to first go to voters. Neither of those bills made it out of their respective committees. One of the backers of that effort was Kent Mayor Dana Ralph. Mayor Ralph, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Love to be back.
Yeah, so I imagine this is a disappointing outcome for you. Is it dead?
So nothing is dead until it's dead. If we can get somebody to resurrect it, but we've missed the cutoffs and we couldn't get in both the House and the Senate, we couldn't get them to even vote on it.
Talk about why this is important to the city of Kent.
So just so as a level set, Washington State is 51st in staffing for police departments. So we are the lowest of the low when it comes to the state, to the United States. City of Kent is at the bottom of that 1.2 officers per 1,000 people. Wow. Policing is expensive. And with all of the things that have changed in our public safety environment in the last few years, there's additional expectations. De-escalation takes longer. The supervisor model has fewer officers per supervisor. There's all of these things, and crime is out of control. Like, our officers are running like crazy, and I just don't have the bodies. And without a funding source, a way to pay for them, I can't take care of my community.
Hmm. So what do you think it is that this did not get traction?
So the things that I heard on one side of the legislature, it was, we don't need more police, which obviously I disagree with. And the other side, it was, we're not going to give a city a taxing authority. Hmm. So we're stuck in the middle of that. And at the end of the day, a city's paramount duty is public safety. And if I can't fund it, I can't provide it. And we don't have the tools. There's nothing by law that is that will allow us even to go to the ballot to generate the kind of revenue that we need.
So do you have a plan B where, okay, if they weren't going to bite on this one, we've got a plan B and maybe it is, you know, next session, but is there something else you can fall back on?
Yeah. So the only plan B we have would be next session to take another run at this. My concern is that I'm going to have to go back to our community and tell them this world that we're living in, it's not going to get better because we don't have the ability. I don't have a fallback plan.
Do you have the ability, though, to reprioritize funds in the city and use less money somewhere else and put it in public safety in the police department?
So not to this amount of money. We're looking at this tax would have generated about $10 million. Mm-hmm. And public safety is already well over half of our budget. I'm underfunding streets. I'm underfunding everything else. So to be able to pull that kind of money there, we just don't have that option. The city of Kent, really quick, about a decade ago, the state changed the way they source sales tax. It used to be, you know, warehouses made money because we got the money being the origin. They changed it to destination. and our entire economy was based on that warehouses in the valley. So we're losing about $20 million a year that had not been backfilled. And so then we're lean. We just don't have places to find that funding.
Is it predominantly that you need money for salaries for more officers?
That's exactly it. This would have allowed us to hire somewhere in the 35 officer range, but it also would have expanded our co-responder model. So connecting people with services, pays for public defenders and prosecutors. It's really a boost of our whole entire public safety, sort of world, which I felt like was going to be compelling because it was a little bit of something for both sides of the aisle, right? We've got the human services side, the public safety side, and unfortunately, we just didn't get traction.
So putting aside whether they would actually do it, you know, it is a supplemental budget year. Is there any mechanism by which they could allot a set of funds to cities that are challenged in this way to just help them out with state funds to fill that gap?
So it would have to be an ongoing revenue stream. It's not because it's salaries. I can't hire somebody for a year and then say, I don't know where the money is going to come from. And so I don't think there's short of this, them dedicating a portion of their sales tax, which was a bill we saw last year and was introduced this year and didn't get a vote. So there's not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. So because you had some pushback from both sides of the aisle, you know, you said you could go back to the legislature next year, but would it be sort of a waste of time to go back with the same proposal that both sides seem to not like?
I have to believe that at some point the legislature is going to get the same message that we're all getting every day, right? That public safety is a priority to our residents, and it's not just Kent, it's across the board, right? That they're gonna have to at some point recognize that through a whole series of decisions that have been made, through the way things have changed here in Washington State, that we don't have any other choice but to fund public safety.
Yeah, I guess let's end with this, Mayor Ralph. What would your message be to your community members who are frustrated with the state of public safety?
I need them to know that the city is fighting for them. We are doing absolutely everything we can because we know that that's the most important thing we can do. And they need to reach out to their legislators. They need to convince the folks that represent them at the state level of exactly what I know, that it's our job to keep them safe.
For more on what happened in Olympia this week, let's check in with our friends at the Center Square. Brett Davis, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so let's talk. Start with education. This is a bill that's getting quite a lot of discussion online, and it would tie the curriculum a school is teaching to their funding. So essentially, it would give the superintendent of public instruction the power to cut funding if what he doesn't like the curriculum.
Right. They describe it in the bill as it would modify requirements for public schools instructional and supplemental materials. Basically, what you said is correct. We talked with Liv Finney from the Washington Policy Center. She put out a blog about that, saying basically what you just said. It gives the superintendent the power to decide, you know, which materials are appropriate and which are not. Said it would basically repeal a state law that says local school districts can choose textbooks and materials for themselves. So
is there any sort of inclination about why this is something the superintendent wants, why this is a power that he wants?
I haven't heard anything specifically about the superintendent, but proponents of the bill, you know, they're worried about, you know, censorship, you know, taking books out of libraries and such. So, of course, the other side is pushing back, saying, you know, we just want age-appropriate materials in libraries and in a curriculum. So sort of a balancing act going on here. I'm not sure how it's going to play out. A lot of parents seem upset about this bill, so
it's very interesting because you have some parents who I would say are more on the right who are upset with some of the things being taught in schools. But then it sounds like there are parents more on the left ideologically who are worried about some things not being allowed in schools.
Right.
So a very interesting bill indeed that I'm sure there's going to continue to be a lot of discussion around.
I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Yes. Another bill that is getting a lot of pushback is House Bill 1589. And we've discussed this before. Okay. That would ban natural gas hookups.
So companies that, you know, serve 500,000 customers or more, basically Puget Sound Energy, without having to come out and say Puget Sound Energy. Rep. Shelley Short, she basically said, she said she talked to the State Utilities and Transportation Commission about this and in considering a gas ban. And this is what she said. She said she was told by someone there, quote, "We will do what we're told," end quote. And she went on to say after that, that was a pretty stunning to have the admission from the regulatory entity that protects taxpayers from excessive costs. So I'm not sure how that's going to play out either. I think we talked about, yeah, we did talk about this earlier. You know, this legislation came up like right after a cold snap. So the timing is a bit interesting.
Another bill that's moving along in Olympia is a bill that would allow workers who are striking to get unemployment benefits.
Right. That'd be House Bill 1893. It would basically remove the prohibition against workers on strike receiving unemployment insurance. Currently, workers on strike, they can't receive benefits like that. What was interesting about this was looking at the fiscal note. It says that an increase in claims would go anywhere from, if this passes, to 812, which is an oddly specific number, to 3,000 a year. And in terms of cost, it would cost anywhere between $9.8 million to $14.1 million in payment benefits. I also thought what was interesting is that a bill like this passed in California, but Governor Gavin Newsom, he vetoed the bill because he said it was too expensive. So Washington State is considering a similar law that California said was too much for them.
Even too expensive for California. And it's interesting because we know there's a lot of union money tied up and a lot of union influence when it comes to politics and what happens. But I suppose the opposition to this being, well, they're choosing to go on strike. They're choosing
Right.
basically to not collect a paycheck.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, Brett Davis, 5 weeks down, just a couple more to go. We appreciate your time.
Goes by so fast.
It does. That's a good thing. Before we put a bow on week five of the legislative session, some news out of the other Washington. Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers, a Republican representing Washington's 5th congressional district, announced she will not run for another term. She said in a statement, in part, "It's been the honor and privilege of my life to represent the people of Eastern Washington in Congress. They inspire me every day. They are part of the strength and soul of America, the greatest experiment in self-governance the world has ever known." That has been Politics Unpacked for this week. I'm Brandi Cruz. Have a great weekend. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42, making Washington a place where all can prosper. Sign up for their newsletter at future42.org. To support Undivided and our content like this, you can subscribe for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com.